Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stoneman, back with you again for another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly chance to get together and find out what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. As we always say, it's your show, so if you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written messages, always welcome. Coming up this week, as part of National Braille Week, we'll be hearing all about the new DotPad X tactile graphics and multi-line Braille display from Dot Ink. Hubert Pavalkovich has been trying out the new Agent demo feature as part of ChatGPT. Plus, we'll be hearing about an award-winning project that took the top honours at the International Sound Awards. Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown are with me this week. Welcome in to both of you. Let's see what's new this week. Hubert, anything new from you?
So this is in beta testing, but it's something that has always been talked about in regards to WhatsApp, and it's something that has made a lot of people feel rather uncomfortable with using WhatsApp. I mean, a lot of people use it. I love WhatsApp. I love sending people 16-minute voice messages. But recently, they are testing a new feature, which is basically usernames. So at the moment, if you want to use WhatsApp, you need to use your phone number, which is one thing. But if you're in WhatsApp groups, people will be able to actually hear your phone number if you're using VoiceOver. People will know your phone number. And a lot of people, for obvious reasons, I'd say, aren't very comfortable with that. Well, now WhatsApp is testing a usernames feature where you can actually have a username attached to your account, which is how people can find you, which I think is really good. It's taken a while to get to, but I'm glad that's being put into beta testing and most likely, hopefully, will come up, because I think it is quite essential, because WhatsApp is a very good messaging client and it's very simple. And I think, you know, it would be a shame for people to be put off using it because they have to use their phone number and it has to be on display. So it's quite nice that actually people will have an alternative now with usernames.
I've been wanting this for about 10 years. Honestly, that always puts me off WhatsApp groups, because they're becoming more common as like a community thing, you know, for giving feedback for apps or whatever. I'm beta testing an app at the minute and they've got a really good WhatsApp community where they want people to, you know, give feedback and report issues and stuff, and it's great. But yeah, you're giving out your phone number, and I just really don't like that. So this would be a username, because I haven't seen this, so this would be a username that people would see instead of your number.
Yes, my only question is, and I have seen this asked before, and I've not seen clarity on this as yet, is, I mean, it'd be a bit silly if they've done this way, but will it be something that new accounts can take advantage of, or can already existing accounts also create a username? I presume yes, but I mean, I'd like to hear an official confirmation of that, but hopefully once, you know, maybe once it comes out of beta testing, we can take a closer look at it.
I had an annoyance with a beta feature this week, but I'll come back to that in a minute. Jackie, what's caught your eye this week?
One of the things, I'm going to pass this on as a tip, I think. I came across this on another podcast, and with the popularity of iOS 26, a lot of people have upgraded to that now. If you go into the phone app, Apple's phone app on iOS 26, some people have noticed that the tabs at the bottom have changed, and some people like their voicemail tab still to be there because it's easy to get to. So there is a slightly new layout in the phone app. So if you are in the contacts tab, right near the top of the screen is something called filter. And if you want your phone app to be as it used to be before iOS 26, double tap on the filter, and then you will find that you can have your voice tab, your voicemail tab, your contacts tab, your recents, and your favorites tab. You can find those tabs along the bottom of the screen if you go into filter and change the look of it to the classic. So I hope that's helpful.
Ah, nice.
I remember when I first opened the phone app when I was beta testing iOS 26, and I didn't quite realize how much the phone app has changed. And all of a sudden, I'm going, "Where's my voicemail? I can't find it, and I needed to find a voicemail." So I'm glad to hear this.
I did the same thing.
So I'm used to the tabs along the bottom of the screen, and one of them, of course, is your voicemail, and another one is your keypad and your recent. And I thought, goodness me, a lot of people will be wondering where that is and how to get it back. And it's the same. I think there's something similar going on in the email client, Apple Mail, as well, where you can go in and change the look of it. So don't despair. It is there still.
Yeah, so I did a similar thing. So I went on to when I first installed iOS 26, I didn't do the beta versions, but when I first updated, I went into the phone app. I thought, oh, okay, yeah, it's all right, is this? Yeah, I can't really. Obviously, the tabs are a bit different, but it's fine. It's quite nice. And then I kept hearing it saying phone, one new item, and I knew I'd missed a call, but then I'd cleared it, or so I thought I had. But it was still constantly saying one new item, and I was like, what? What is going on? What is this? And yeah, it turned out there was a voicemail buried in that unified list of all your calls. Yeah, it's not easy to find them.
Yeah, and I'm having I don't know if anybody can help here, but I'm having an issue with emojis, and they keep every emoji that I put maybe in a text message or whatever, it says say red heart, ghost, smiley face,
Ghost,
ghost.
yeah.
What is all that about with the images? I just don't like the way they're working.
Have no idea. I've got exactly the same issue. I remember us talking about this. A way around it, this was off air, by the way, but a way around it is there's a box, or there should be a box at the top that says describe an emoji. If you double tap on that and then don't type anything in, but just double tap so that the keyboard's up and then flick to the right, you get your normal emojis there. But yeah, mine are doing exactly the same thing. Ghost face next to everyone. I don't know where it's come from. I don't know how to get rid of it.
It's so annoying, and I just can't. And very often when you lift your finger hoping that that image is going to go in, it doesn't. So I'm confused by the images now. I don't like the way that it works, but I can't find that box, Callum, that edit box, because I remember you saying that before off air, and I had a look and I can't find it. So the only way I can get it is if you go to the search for images, and then that seems to put your most recent ones along the top above the letters and numbers, but I just wish they'd left it alone. It's just annoying.
I think it's something to do with these like memojis, are they, or the stickers that are also there? I don't know. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk if you can help with that, because that is doing my head in. Well, I mentioned before about how I had an annoyance with a beta feature. This isn't news as such, but I was on the Google Home app the other day. I was just looking at something because I've got the Google Nest doorbell, and someone had been to the door, and I was, checking something. I was checking what it was, and I spotted. So there was the usual playback controls for playing the video, and then there was a button that said "Ask Home." And of course, Google are bringing in these AI features to, where you can ask about the footage that your doorbell has picked up, or you can just ask about your devices, really. And I thought, oh, that's new. So I double tapped on it. It gave me the kind of terms and conditions about, enable the Ask Home feature. It's using Gemini. It can answer your questions. It can see your camera footage, all that kind of stuff. Make sure all members of your home have consent before enabling it. Agree to the terms and conditions, all that. Went through it. And then it said, basically, what's your question? And there were a few prompts, example prompts. One of them was, have there been any packages delivered today? So I thought, yeah, I'll check that. I knew there had been, so I thought I'll see what it comes back with. And it responded within about a second. I thought, wow, that is brilliant. Had a look at the response. It said, Ask Home is not available for your home yet. You will get a message when it is. Oh, come on. I was like, don't do that to me.
Oh.
That just shows they are coming, these AI features from Google, but it teases you, apparently.
I hate when this happens.
Yeah, I do as well. It's very frustrating. It's the same with the A Lady. I tried something very similar recently, with the A Lady Plus subscription, and I wanted just to see a bit more information about it. And when I got to it said, see whether this is in your area. So I put in my postcode. Sorry, not in your region at the moment. Oh, damn.
I had this with ChatGPT where I said you can link your Google Drive to it, but you actually can't do anything with this once you do it. So,
That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, another interesting week in the tech world. Stick around. This is Tech Talk.
This National Braille Week, we're speaking to the team at Dot Incorporated to hear about their range of devices, including the new Dot Pad X, tactile graphics, and multi-line Braille display. I'm joined now by Dave Williams from Dot. Dave, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Oh, it's good to be with you, Howell. Fantastic to be talking about Braille as well.
Well, Dave, you're known as a huge supporter of Braille. Tell us a bit about what Braille means to you.
Well, of course, long-time listeners of RNIB Connect Radio will be familiar with my story about proposing to my wife on a Braille Scrabble board, reading the bedtime story with my son when he was little in Braille, and of course, how important it is to me when I find that when I've completed one of these marathons, they sometimes put Braille on the finisher medal. So, very personal format, very powerful format. It's the thing that gives us a degree of precision and privacy and peace when we read with our fingers, freeing up our ears to hear the people in the environment around us. So, very important format, and long may it continue.
Well, Dot has recently released the Dot Pad X multi-line Braille display. Run us through what makes it special.
So, Dot Pad X is a tactile display capable of showing tactile graphics and Braille in one device. So it has a 300 cell multi-line display that can show graphs or maps or geometry, or multi-line Braille. And then it also has a single line 20 cell display in the same device. So it's a screen for your fingers, really, Hal.
So who's something like the Dot Pad X suitable for? Do you need to be proficient in Braille to get the most out of it, do you think?
You don't need to know Braille at all, actually, because of the tactile graphics aspect. So, because you can show landmarks or maps or animals or anything that you can feel with your fingers, you don't have to be an expert in reading Braille. Of course, if you can read Braille, that's going to give you additional information. So, in many scenarios, you might have tactile image on the multi-line area and then some information on the single-line area in Braille. So, Braille certainly brings it to life a little bit more, but you don't have to be a Braille reader to use Dot Pad X.
And is the Dot Pad X easy to pick up? You haven't used maybe a multi-line Braille display previously. Is it sort of quite intuitive? Is it something that you'll understand how to use it quite quickly?
So, Dot Pad X, it's designed to work with your iPhone or your iPad or your Windows computer. So it connects with your existing screen reader. So if you're already a VoiceOver user, a JAWS user, or an NVDA user, Dot Pad X will work with those screen readers. You can also download Dot Canvas, which is our tactile graphics application that allows anyone to draw on screen, and then you can feel on the dot pad what has been drawn. So, for example, my son was able to show me some of his maths revision when he was studying for his GCSEs. He also did his signature. That was the first time I was able to feel that under my fingers. You can then save that content and come back to it later. You might add additional details, and then you can step through those. So potentially for mobility or orientation, you might add up levels of detail there. And so Dot Canvas, it's a free app. It's literally as simple as putting your finger on the screen of your device, moving it around, and then over on the dot pad, you'll feel the dots raise. So you don't have to take your hands off while the sighted, teaching assistant or parent or other stakeholder is drawing with you. But if I might sort of pick you up on your choice of words, Hal. You said, is it easy to pick up? And in a very literal sense, it really is. It only weighs 1.2 kilograms, fits in a backpack or school bag. So very portable, about the size of, I would say about the size of an iPad Pro, something like that. So really easy to carry around. I have it, you know, with me most of the time in my backpack, along with, you know, my laptop and all the, you know, wires and things. So it actually is very portable. You don't need a chiropractor, and it, you know, it should fit on your desk.
Lots to like about it. Run us through the price and where UK customers can order the DotPad X.
So I'm going to recommend that you check in with our UK distributor, who are VisionAid, or on the RNIB shop, because as we record this, I think the price is under review, and I think there are going to be some changes in the right direction, you'll be glad to hear, towards the end of October. So certainly pound for pound, it's very competitive if you think about the cost of a 40 cell braille display and how many characters you can show there. Bear in mind, DotPad can show 8 lines of braille on the multi-line display and then a further 20 characters on the single line display. So essentially you're getting a 9-line braille display. I would check with the distributor, because anything I say now is likely to be out of date as soon as we finish this.
There's not just the DotPad X that's in the range from Dot. What other products do you offer?
So DotPad X is the kind of the flagship product, really, that Dot offers directly to consumers. Dot also makes a range of apps to support DotPad. So those apps are generally free for you to download. So Dot Canvas, which I mentioned earlier, for example. We're also working on a book reading app as well. And there are some AI tools in the works. So it won't be too long before you can ask your smart device to create a tactile image of, say, the Eiffel Tower, and then you'll get a tactile representation of that on DotPad. So that stuff's in the works, and it's coming soon, so that's quite exciting. But also, Dot is the original equipment manufacturer for other Braille products. So we work with our friends over at Humanware and Harpo and a number of other companies to supply the Braille components that go inside some of their devices as well. So as well as what they call B2C, so selling to customers, we also distribute our components to other manufacturers.
For someone listening who might be considering taking up Braille or maybe for the first time or now going back to it, where do you think is a good place to start?
Well, of course, I'm going to recommend the Braillists Foundation, a UK charity. We're quite a small group, grassroots, led by Braille readers for Braille readers. And so Braillists.org has a Braille for Beginners course to get you started if you want peer support. I know RNIB as well offers Braille courses. Fingerprint is very popular. So definitely check that out. And also ask around locally, you know, perhaps your local organization in your area might offer some resources. And if they don't, they're welcome to use those from the Braillist Foundation as well.
Well, where's the best place to find out more about the DotPad X and the wider work of Dot?
Indeed, yeah, you can visit Dot on the web, dotincorp.com. That's dotincorp.com. And you can find out more about DotPad X in the UK from VisionAid.
Dave Williams from Dot Incorporated. Thanks for joining us this National Braille Week here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, we have frequently talked about AI chatbots and the wonderful things they can do. We've even talked about live AI, where it can describe things for us. Well, things have moved on a little bit since, and today I will show you that exactly. So today we'll be talking about AI user agents. Now, that sounds quite funky, doesn't it? In simple terms, when you use an AI chatbot, quite often, most of the functions you would do is send it a bit of text or speak a bit of audio as a question or a command, and it would simply give you a verbal or text response depending what you asked. Now, that's great, but things need to elevate. Things need to go up and improve. What's the next step? Well, getting AI to literally do things for you on your devices. So in a nutshell, an AI user agent can do certain functions for you. For example, filling in certain forms or things like that, or maybe managing complex files for you, managing a spreadsheet maybe where you give it the information and the user agent basically inputs the information for you. And then if you want it summarized, it can do it for you too. Things like that where you actually get the chatbot to do something, do tasks rather than just give you text responses. That's the simplest way of describing it. So I've gone into the ChatGPT app, and what I want to show you today is actually what an AI user agent does for me. So I have created a little task to, well, test an AI user agent and see what it can do and see how far I can push it, and if it works, what other things I can use it for. So to give you a bit of an example, I manage a football group on social media, a kind of small football community where people can talk about football, basically, the teams they support, the games they've seen, fantasy football, and various other things like that. And there I run a prediction game which takes place throughout the Premier League season, where people basically predict which team will win each weekend. And if their team wins, they go through to the next week. And if their team loses, they are out. And we carry on until there's one person left. And then when that person has won, we restart and go again and do like that throughout the season. The game involves a full-on scoring system where, depending on how long each round lasts, will depend how many points players get, because every week points increase. And that sort of thing. I've made it fairly complex. Nothing rocket science, but equally something that takes a bit of time if you manage it yourself, because you need to not only keep a note of people's team picks every week, you need to then keep track of everyone's individual scores. The goals that their team picks score also count towards tie breaks and things like that. So it's quite a complex thing, and you can keep track of it, but an AI user agent just makes it so much simpler. Let me show you how.
Menu. Search. Chat. Library. GPT. New project. AI user agent function. Jermaine Watamina song. Last one standing. Button.
Last one standing is the game, and this is the user agent that I have. So I will tap on this conversation now. Based on Trevor A. Strobe said a few weeks ago, if you remember, what this will do is when I open that conversation, ChatGPT will then be able to see everything that has been mentioned in this conversation so far. Because if I was to start a new conversation and reference this game, ChatGPT would have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. However, because I tap on this conversation, which has all the information, it will have an idea of what we are talking about. I've also done a few new things to see if I can save the spreadsheet as a file a bit easier too. What we're going to do today in this is actually add an extra scoring function, but I'm going to get ChatGPT to explain how this game works based on its understanding of the game that I have given it for this purpose. We will switch to voice mode and have a little chat with Mr. ChatGPT or Mrs. or whatever you prefer. So this is a recording for a demonstration for my Tech Talk show. For the purpose of this demonstration, can you explain the rules of the game which you are helping me to manage?
It's a season-long football predictor competition called Last One Standing. Each round starts with every participant picking a Premier League team they think will win that week's fixtures. If their chosen team wins, they earn points and move on to the next week of that round. If their team loses or draws, they're out for that round. Each week that a participant continues, the points they earn increase by one. So week one is worth 1 point, week two is worth 2 points, and so on. The round ends when only one player remains standing, and that winner gets an extra 3 points added to their season total. Goals scored by chosen teams serve as tiebreakers. At the end of each round, the round points are added to each player's season points, and the competition continues throughout the Premier League season. In short, we keep track of who picks which teams each week, award points based on their chosen team's performance, and at the end of each round, we identify the last one standing.
What I want to do now is change a few rules. So, it has explained to you the rules and the scoring. Fantastic. Today, we will do two things. One, we will add a new scoring rule that was suggested by one of the members, and I want to see if the user agent will understand this rule. And also, we will see if my latest feature will work based on what OpenAI have announced. You can link apps and connectors to ChatGPT. So I've linked in Google Drive, and I want to see if it will be able to save my spreadsheet to Google Drive as a file rather than me having to download it, which so far, at least in the ChatGPT app on the iPhone, I have not managed to figure out how to do. I'm going to switch back to voice mode, and I will ask it to add a brand new rule. And for the purposes of this demonstration, I will tell you what this rule is. So at the moment, if a player picks a team and that team draws, they are still out. Even though the team hasn't lost, it hasn't won. They are out. Now, what I want to do is change it. So a player gets more points every week they are in the competition. So as it was mentioned, week one is worth 1 point, week two is worth 2 points, 3 week, 3 points. Now, if a person draws, they will still go through to the next week, but their points will not increase. So they will stay at however many points they gained. So let's say they got to week two and their team draws. Instead of getting 2 points, they will get 1 point. Adds an extra complication to the scoring, but I want to see how the AI agent will handle it. So let me see. What I'll do is tell it exactly the rule that I'm adding, and I will ask it to clarify it before it adds it to the system. I want to add a new rule to the game, which is regarding if a player's team pick draws the game and doesn't win or lose. In this case, what I want to happen is the player's points will not increase. So for example, if a player was supposed to gain 2 points for a win because they gotten through to week two, they will get 1 point if their week two pick draws the game. Do you understand?
Yes, I understand. You're adding a new rule so that if a player's chosen team draws instead of winning or losing, the player will still move on to the next week, but will earn only half the points they would have earned for a win. So if it's week two and a win would give them 2 points, draw would give them 1 point. In other words, a draw means they earn half the points for that week and still advance to the next week. That makes sense. We can definitely incorporate that into your scoring rules.
So I've muted my ChatGPT microphone to talk to you. So it has understood the rule to a degree. It said the player will earn half the points. Now, what I'm curious about is if a player goes through to week three, will it give them 1.5 instead of, let's say, two? So I could have maybe said they will earn the same total they gained in the previous week. But we'll see how it goes. If it doesn't work, I can always refine that rule. The next thing I want to try is to see if it can save my spreadsheet into my Google Drive. Now, I have linked my Google Drive to ChatGPT, which you can now do. You can also link your Gmail. You can also link your Google Calendar and Slack as well. So you can link a few things, and I think that list is probably going to get bigger. But my question is, it can access my OneDrive files, fair enough. Can it actually save files to my Google Drive? Let's find out by unmuting myself and asking it the question. Now, I have recently linked my Google Drive using the app and connectors functions. So can I ask you, are you able to save this spreadsheet into my Google Drive?
I'm currently not able to access any external APIs or connectors, including Google Drive. So while I can provide you with the file to download and then you can upload it to your Google Drive yourself, I'm not able to directly save it there for you at the moment.
So that's a bit of a shame because it has enabled me to link my Google Drive, but yet it can't seem to actually let me do much with it. So I think we go back to the understanding that it can maybe access my files, but not actually save to my Google Drive. One more thing I want to do. I'm going to get ChatGPT to summarize some of that data that it looks after in that spreadsheet. I want to know what the current leaderboard is based on the scoring. It might not include the current points because the round has not finished. We still have about four players, I think, going through to the third week. but I wanted to see if it can summarize the data that it holds. It probably can, but I want you to hear it. Going back to the spreadsheet, can you give me a summary of the current leaderboard standings?
As of now, here's how the standings look. Brad is leading with the highest season points and goals since he's been consistently earning points each week. Jake and Liam have also moved up thanks to their most recent wins, putting them close behind. Nick is now in a similar position to Liam as he also picked Newcastle and earned the same points for this week. Hubert and Luke are trailing since they've been eliminated in earlier weeks and haven't added more points. In short, Brad is currently at the top of the leaderboard and Jake and Liam are close behind. If you need exact numbers and more details, just let me know.
So there we go. It summarizes the data perfectly well. And now what will happen is I'm recording this on a Thursday. On a Friday, I will be asking people for their team picks that have gone through. And we will see A, how they do, and B, if the new rule I have applied for teams that draw their games will also count. Then throughout the weekend, the way it will work is I will send football results to the user agent. And based on that, you'll be able to compare the football results with the team picks of the four people remaining and then match them and score them accordingly to the scoring system and the rules of the game. I have tested that last week and it did work indeed. So it's quite good because all I need to do is give it bits of information and it will do all the spreadsheet management for me, produce leaderboards, summarize them and everything like that. And I can download the spreadsheet at any time, if I can figure out how to do it. But hopefully soon, I won't have to because it will be able to hopefully save it to my Google Drive once that feature is fully available. But that is the basic demo of an AI user agent. It can do many other things as well. I'm still learning how to use it. You can get it to fill out forms on websites, apparently, and help you, I don't know, for example, book flights. But to what extent it can do it, I'm still not fully sure because I'm still trying it. It seems to be able to do quite a bit as long as you are clear with your instructions. And the good thing is you can use voice mode as well. But if you are using a text field and you are starting a new chat with a user agent, I think it is handy to enter /agent into the text field because then ChatGPT will know that you wish to use an AI user agent. That is what I did, and it seems to have worked pretty well. So yes, that is a brief demo of ChatGPT's user agent. Let me know what you thought of that, and also let me know if there are other things that you would like me to maybe try the user agent with and test its capabilities. Let us know all your thoughts. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Site Village exhibitions are an opportunity for people to come together to find out more about products and services aimed at the blind and partially sighted community. One of the biggest events of the year is always in the Southeast, and Rose Woodall, Site Village Events Coordinator from QAC, joins me now to talk about it. Rose, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It doesn't seem that long since I last spoke to you. Excited about London.
Very busy year. What can we expect from Site Village London this year?
Well, we're excited because, one, we've gone with a new venue, which is more accessible all on the ground floor. And two, by popular demand, really, people's asking for a two-day Site Village in London. So we've got 2 days in a lovely venue. So, yeah, we're really excited.
Are there any exhibitors you're particularly excited to welcome to the event this year?
Yeah, so we've got a range of, you know, exhibitors coming to Site Village. We've got some new ones. So we've got Braille Index are coming. We've got Illumination Freedom. So that's like physical. We've got Humanware. VI Safety is one of our sponsors, Thomas Pocklington, RNIB. There's a huge list for London. It's all on the website.
Well, Site Village exhibitions take place right across the country, and you've been very busy this year. But for people who haven't been to a Site Village exhibition before, what's the difference between being there in person and maybe just looking at some of the exhibitors online?
I think when you're there in person, you really feel the really good atmosphere. People have described it. It's a sensory show. It's very hands-on. So you can get to try the product. You can talk. You can ask the questions. Things that if you only see it in a magazine, or, you know, if you've been made aware of it, you don't get all that interaction. So Site Village is really nice. You can come for the day. There'll be refreshments. There's two seminars taking place throughout the day. So I think over the 2 days, there's like 36 seminars. So a lot going on.
And you're back in London on the 18th and 19th of November in the new venue, as you say. Tell us a bit about the ILEC Conference Centre. What's it like?
Yeah, so it's lovely. It's a spacious event in the West London. And it's, as I said, on the ground floor. There's no pillars. There's no obstruction. It's carpeted, so there's no sound from the acoustics of the canes. So, yeah, it's just a really lovely venue. There is parking at the rear of the venue, which has got a fare. But, yeah, it's just a really nice venue. So we're hoping that people are going to enjoy the new venue.
And for public transport, what's the best tube stations or bus stations for people to get there?
Yeah, so the nearest tube station is West Brompton. Again, all the travel information is on the website. There's direct bus service that drops you right outside the conference. There's a number of buses, again, all on the website. If I read them all out, you might not remember. But, yeah, all the information's on there. So very accessible in London to bus service, tubes. So, yeah, hopefully it ticks all the boxes and people will enjoy it.
Well, like many of the other Site Village events so far this year, you'll be holding seminars, as you mentioned, at Site Village in London, away from the main hall, a quieter space to hear about lots of different topics. What can you tell us about some of the speakers you've got lined up?
Yeah, so I've highlighted just a couple. So we've got an introduction presentation about Index Braille, talking about their Braille printing. We've got physical activities from Metro Sports. Thomas Pocklington, come and find out about AI. And we've got a new one, which is incorporating essential oils and sensory exercise for well-being for visually impaired. And C-Able are offering award-winning holidays. So that's just to name a few. There's so many going on.
And as we move towards the end of 2025, you're not slowing down. Rose, you're already planning for 2026. What can you tell us about next year's Site Village events? Or is it top secret at the moment?
No, it's not top secret. I can tell you because, believe it or not, next year is booked. So we're travelling back to Scotland next year. We're going down to Devon. We haven't been there for a few years. We'll be working with the North Wales Blind Society and going to North Wales instead of South Wales. We've got Leeds, Birmingham and London. So, yeah, six events next year.
Well, lots to look forward to next year already. Entrance is free, of course, to Site Village events, but you do recommend registering before you arrive, Rose. How can people do that and also find out a bit more about Site Village London?
Yeah, so everything is on the website and, you know, any questions, feel free to call me. I will give the information. If you want to pre-register, which we ask people do, just because it makes the queues go down quicker because we can just scan you in quicker. So to pre-register, you can go on to the www.qacsitevillage.org.uk and book your tickets. You can phone us directly on 0121 803 5313 or you can email us on sv@qac.ac.uk.
Well, we'll look forward to Site Village London at the ILEC Conference Centre in London on Tuesday the 18th and Wednesday the 19th of November. Rose Woodall from QAC, thanks again for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing everyone there.
There's a sale running on the RNIB shop from the 13th to the 24th of October, and here to tell us more about it is buying advisor for the RNIB, Charlie Jarvis. Charlie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, quite simply, tell us about this sale.
As you said, it's running from the 13th to the 24th of October, or until stocks last. And we've got a range of different lights available, from portable desk lamps, floor lamps, and a couple of new additions as well.
Well, tell us about those new additions.
So we've got a new motion sensor light, and customers have actually been asking us to get something like this for a while. So we're really pleased to be able to offer it. So it can either be screwed in or it has adhesive patches on the back. So you can just put it in any area you want some additional light in. For example, like under your kitchen cabinets or in your wardrobe. I personally would use them like going down my skirting board on the stairs, because you know, in the night when you need to get a glass of water, you don't want to put the big light on because it might wake you up. These will just come on as you walk past them and give you a bit of additional light. So they're really cool. I really like them.
Well, lots of great stuff for people to have a look at throughout this sale. Can you go into a little bit, please, why lighting is so important, particularly for blind and partially sighted people?
Yeah, I mean, especially at this time of year when it's getting dark at 4 PM and you just need a bit more additional lighting to do your everyday tasks that the big ceiling light isn't always able to provide. So like, as an example, some of the portable lights we offer, they have different light temperatures. So I know personally, I kind of struggle with that bright white light bulb, but some of the options we have available, you can have a warmer light and it gives off more of an orangey glow that's just a bit softer on the eyes. But the really great thing about the lights we offer is they have like accurate color matching. So if you're doing anything like painting or sewing, that sort of thing, the light isn't going to change the color of what you're seeing. So you're still getting a really accurate representation of the things you're looking at, which is really good.
Brilliant. And my final question for you, Charlie, is, for more information or to take advantage of the sale, where can people go?
So you have a couple of different options. So you can call our helpline on 0303 123 9999, or you can visit our online shop where there's the full range available, lots of great images and specifications there as well.
So head on over then to shop.rnib.org.uk for all your lighting needs and to take advantage of this up to 25% off running from the 13th to the 24th of October. Well, Charlie Jarvis, buying advisor for the RNIB, thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Time to find out about a great project for blind and partially sighted people that has gained recognition at the highest level. Here's Hubert with more.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to give a great project some recognition, which it has received plenty, because Sound Without Sight has recently been crowned the winner of the Social and Culture category, plus the ceremony as a whole, at the International Sound Awards 2025, the awards ceremony dubbed the Oscars of Sound, which recognises impactful music projects, products and services. Joining me now is the project manager for Sound Without Sight, Mr. Jay Pocknell. Jay, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Hubert. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations, Jay. I mean, it's a fantastic achievement for a project that has been going on, you know, for quite a while. Can you tell us a little bit about the Sound Without Sight project? Kind of what gap does it aim to fill and the practical ways it aims to help blind and partially sighted people?
Well, I think originally it stemmed from my own experience of trying to navigate the music industry. So I'm a producer and a mixing and mastering engineer. And I think growing up, it was absolutely my kind of number one target to be working in music, recording bands and getting stuff on the radio. And I think I went some way towards achieving that pretty early on in my career, which I was super happy about. I'm partially sighted and I maybe didn't expect the accessibility barriers that I faced when I did get to that point working in the industry. So I didn't really know where to go to get any support, or, you know, where to meet other people who had overcome those barriers and who could maybe share a bit of advice. So I guess that was the original idea for Sound Without Sight, was to create that space. The pandemic created a bit of space where I could think a bit more about, you know, how we would go about doing that. You know, for over that time, we weren't allowed to go into the studio. So I was, you know, thinking, how could I, you know, what could I do to make an impact? So I did a bit of research and reached out to anyone that I knew who might know blind or partially sighted musicians or audio engineers. And through that research, just developed what developed into Sound Without Sight over time, which is a kind of online knowledge hub. We aim to be the kind of the one front door into information about music or sound recording or audio production, anything like that. We aim to bring all the resources together in one place, because something that we found as a really common barrier is, especially if you're using a screen reader, trawling the internet for up-to-date information can be quite challenging, especially given that a lot of the, I guess, expertise relating to individual pieces of software or audio production equipment, there, all of that's kind of gatekept a little bit. It's kind of tucked away in little communities and silos. So I guess the point of Sound Without Sight is to tie all of those things together, create this, I guess, way in where you can much more easily discover anything that you need related to music or audio production or anything like that.
And speaking from experience here, you know, I've been on the Sound Without Sight website a few times and discovered plenty of things that helped me to, you know, certainly with my own audio production. Being a radio production kind of geek myself, I found it absolutely fascinating and very insightful to learn about, you know, devices such as the Vocaster audio interfaces, or maybe also learning about audio editing applications such as Reaper. I found it really interesting, and like you say, points you in the right direction to find all sorts of additional resources, which is, I think, essential, because it's a nightmare trying to find these resources. Now, this awards ceremony is quite big. I mean, it is dubbed the Oscars of Sound. So what does it mean to you personally to have won this award?
I think personally, it's amazing to have that recognition. I think I don't want to take it too personally, though, because it's an award for the project as a whole. One thing that I meant to mention in that first response was the team that we've got around the project as well. So yeah, I guess I'm project manager of it, but we've got an amazing steering group, and that's built up from, you know, people that have got a, you know, lived experience of being blind or partially sighted, but also different areas of music production or audio production. You know, I'm quite happy to admit that I'm not going to be the expert in every area of music or sound production, because that's such a wide thing. You know, music by itself, that means a million different things to different people. So I'm very proud that the project is community-led. We've got so many different contributors who have added content to the website. It's not all me. And I hope it becomes less and less me over time, and we get more and more people coming to contribute content. But I think, yeah, to have that recognition of the project as a whole and everyone who's contributed to it is really important. And I hope we can take that forward now, especially having, you know, the representatives on the what they call the jury, the people who decide who the awards go to and score all of the projects. You know, there's representatives in there from Google and Apple and Spotify, big companies like these. So yeah, it's really great to hopefully have the project on companies like that's radar. We'll be able to make the most of that moving forward.
And what does it mean to the project as a whole to win such a prestigious award?
I mean, I think it's going to be great just to get, hopefully, all of these resources into the hands and into the ears of more people. I think when you're growing a new project, like, that exposure is really important, and there may well be loads and loads of people who could benefit from all of these resources who just don't know they exist yet. So I guess one of the reasons that I'm really grateful to have this slot to talk about the project as well is just I guess the challenge is the awareness. It's now we've got this platform that allows people to contribute their own experience, and a place that allows people to meet other musicians or audio engineers. It's all about kind of propagating that across the industry now, and propagating it across the community. And I think also from all the resources and the best practice that we're able to promote, try to bring together some best practice guidelines for example, software or hardware design that people use to make music. It'd be great if we could use Sound Without Sight and all the experience that's now on there to make a more inclusive and accessible audio industry. So I think that's the next steps, really.
And you mentioned community. I mean, how powerful is music and sound at, you know, connecting various communities in so many different ways?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've seen, not just in the blind or partially sighted community, the importance and I guess the empowerment that podcasting can create, and you know, people streaming onto YouTube, there's so many people now who find it like a really, really useful platform for kind of sharing their stories and like you say, connecting people. I think the more that we can support people to do that, the better.
Now, I like discussing future of anything technical or anything creative. So my question for you now is, what are your hopes for the future of sound innovation?
We're at a point now where spatial audio is becoming a massive conversation. And I think, like you're seeing it in kind of everyday mainstream technology now. So in the new AirPods, for example, you've got the personalized spatial audio. We're seeing it at home in games consoles where you've got 3D audio on not very expensive headsets, which is amazing. I think there's going to be so many applications for immersive audio tech in the future. I think in terms of music production, creating those best practice guidelines for software and hardware design will be really important. I really look forward to a day where you don't have to learn how a specific piece of software works. There's a more standard approach and a more standard user experience. So if I want to go into a studio as a blind or partially sighted person, I know how the kit is going to work. We're not quite there yet, but I really think that bringing the community together like this allows us to make that progress much more quickly.
Now, a question that is often being talked about, I've been to some events regarding kind of audio production recently. What's your take on the use of AI in terms of music and audio production?
I think AI has the potential to be a massive help. I think the conversation that you see a lot, and I think this is true as well, that AI has the potential to take away some of the creativity in the process. And I don't think anyone's a massive fan of that. But I love the idea of AI being a helping hand. You know, like if you're writing a document in a word processor, Word will recommend where you might want to tweak something. I guess to have AI as an assistant can be really empowering, really helpful, and help you do things a lot more quickly. I think we've seen examples through the work that the MIDI Association are doing, using AI to support with like voice control of hardware and software that can allow people to do stuff a lot more quickly. I think those kind of applications are really cool. I'm not a super massive fan of the, you know, using AI to directly create music from a text or a voice prompt. Those things do exist and they're quite popular. I think there are big conversations happening at the moment about the ethics behind that and how you train these models. I'm yet to hear something that's been produced by AI that makes me think, wow, that's a really interesting or innovative piece of music that really moves me emotionally. I think it's very good at creating quite middle of the road music, as you might expect, given that it's almost like an average of all the music that's ever been made. I think AI has, like I say, in terms of workflow and supporting users to get what they want to do done quickly, I think that's great. I'm not a super fan of AI replacing human creativity.
Absolutely. I think the human touch is, in my opinion, irreplaceable in audio creation. What's next for Sound Without Sight following your great achievements? Can you share a few kind of projects you're currently working on or that are being worked on in the future?
We're still in the phase, like the project's still quite young in the grand scheme of things. We launched in 2023. It's taken a while to get the project off the ground and get the momentum that we currently have. So I think we really want to consolidate what we're currently doing, which is obviously running the online knowledge hub. We're also running monthly events. So we run events based on, pieces of technology that are becoming more accessible, or B, showcasing community members, so blind or partially sighted musicians or audio engineers who are doing great stuff and really kind of taking a look at their careers and how they overcame certain barriers. So we're all about sharing that experience, and we want to keep doing that and keep getting our podcast out and keep growing the project in that way. And I think hopefully we'll see the community grow naturally around that. One thing that I would love to do, which we're not quite in a position to do yet, but something I would love to do, is run like a mentorship program where maybe some of those headline guests that we've had as part of our monthly meetup sessions could mentor up and coming blind or partially sighted musicians or engineers. As I say, there's a bit of structure that we need to put in place in order for that to be a really kind of watertight program, but that's something I'd love to see in future. And again, I think now that we've got quite a strong community around the project, how can we create more opportunities for all of those people who love our content? So is there stuff that we can do working with audio companies and music industry companies to create work placements specifically for our members? Again, that's a little way off yet, but that's something that I think now that we've got community, we would totally love to make those opportunities. It's just, yeah, gotta get all the ducks in a row first.
And lastly, if people would like to find out more about Sound Without Sight, or you know, follow you or keep up with what you guys do, how can they do that?
Best way is to go to our website at soundwithoutsight.org. So you can sign up to our newsletter on there. You could also sign up to one of our monthly events that I mentioned. And actually the next one of those, I don't know whether anyone has heard the BBC Radio 3 documentary on Braille music that aired recently, but we are going to be featuring the presenter and the producer of that documentary at our next monthly meetup, talking all about the process of creating a documentary for the BBC. So yeah, I would definitely recommend coming along to that, meeting those headline guests, and also meeting the rest of our community, and yeah, get involved. We'd love to see you there.
Fantastic, Jay. Once again, many congratulations for your fantastic achievement, and may Sound Without Sight keep on growing, and hopefully we'll see you on Tech Talk very soon. But thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. Cheers.
And that's just about all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in and joining us. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need if you want to get in contact with us with your thoughts on what's going on in the tech world recently, any tips, or if you've got any questions, send them in. We will do our best to help you out. Voice notes or written messages, always welcome. We'll be back with you, same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavelkovic, and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next week.